Spingola. I'm coming to you from the frigid suburbs of Chicago. It is really, really, really cold. I appreciate you joining me today on RBN. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit spingola.com for a list of future guests and relevant links. Please also visit spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com, a site one of our dear listeners created and maintains. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Please remember, I do not access my regular email address during the program. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatingo.com. My Twitter account is twitter.com/Deanna Spingola. My guest the first hour today is Kelly Patricia O'Meara. She is the author of the book. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book. It's called Psyched Out: How Psychiatry Sells Mental Illness and Pushes Pills That Kill. Kelly, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Oh, I just love your book. I just love your book. In fact, I'm writing a book, and I have referenced your book numerous times because it is so relevant to what's going on today. I mean, it's almost prophetic, the way that you've written it, and, well, these things just continue to happen.
I appreciate that. Unfortunately, I'm sad that, you know, I wrote this book many, many years ago, and I wish I could say that things have changed, and they have not. They've only gotten worse as far as the psychiatric drugging. So that makes me sad.
Indeed. Right. It was, 2007?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, I had hoped that, you know, information as it slowly gets out and people read my book and others like it, that, you know, we may bring some reduction in the number of people who are being diagnosed and drugged as treatment. You know, so far it appears it's gone just the opposite.
Right. It seems with each new event, that the people in the mainstream, the people in the media are saying, oh, it's because we just don't have enough mental health care. And after every event, that is what they push. They push more mental health treatment, which means psychiatric drugs.
Right. And you know, I like to think that people are getting smarter about it. You know, we've had, you know, several shootings, I guess the one that comes to mind as far as mental health that seems to be pushing the mental health agenda is still Sandy Hook, which is really unfortunate because they're increasing spending on mental health in Connecticut. In fact, 37 states have increased their mental health spending since Sandy Hook. And it's ironic because there are no mental health records for the last 5 years of Adam Lanza's life that have been made public without knowing what his mental health. In fact, I don't even like to call it mental health anymore. I like to call it mental illness. If they were mentally healthy, they wouldn't need treatment. So we don't know anything about his mental illness the last 5 years of his life, but that hasn't stopped the state of Connecticut from increasing their spending enormously on, you know, mental illness treatments and programs, and neither has it stopped 37 other states following suit. And in fact, the federal government has increased its spending on mental illness. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a bad policy for a state to have such a horrific tragedy occur, a mass shooting, and not release the mental illness records and the treatment records of Adam Lanza. Really, I think, is a scandal. But having said that, you know, that's not obviously the last school shooting. We had one just last week. So
Would you like to talk about that shooting? It seems like there's just Well, he shot some of his own cousins, and it's and the well, first thing I said was, I wonder which drug he was on.
Certainly, that's the first thing that I ask after covering this issue now for almost 20 years. Nothing that I have been able to research comes up with anything about, you know, mental illness treatment or any kind of psychiatric drugs. And again, because they're minors, certainly the shooter was a minor, I don't know that that will ever be released. And that's one of the problems in this country, that when these school shootings occur, because these kids are minors, often that information is not made public unless the family releases it or some friends or so forth and so on. I believe it's necessary in today's world for that information to become public right away.
Oh, absolutely.
If they were on pain or heroin, they wouldn't have any problem telling us that.
Which is the big
difference. Don't understand why there's such a clampdown on information about the prescribed drugs. But again, in this most recent shooting in Washington State, I can't find anything yet that suggests that he was, you know, having any kind of psychiatric treatment or had been diagnosed with anything.
Wow, that is amazing. But I just feel like he probably was. And I think that they are, that the media is getting more, they're not talking about it as much. For instance, when Robin Williams committed suicide, they mentioned very little about the treatment that he was receiving. And he had previously had alcoholic issues. He had alcoholism issues. And his wife said that he had not drank for quite a long time. And so he went to a rehab center. And I think that he went there with the intention of getting some help for his depression. And he also was diagnosed with early Parkinson's disease. And Parkinsonianism is a byproduct or a side effect of some of the psychiatric drugs. And so I really think that he was probably on one of the SSRI drugs.
Well, Robin Williams actually did a couple stand-up comedy routines where he talks about the prescription psychiatric drugs that he had taken. Yeah, you can see them on YouTube. So we know that throughout his life he battled depression, and we know that he had been, quote-unquote, treated with psychiatric drugs. What we don't know is at the end of his life, had he been on a psychiatric drug, was it not, quote-unquote, working? Did he go check himself in, and was he prescribed additional psychiatric drugs? That's what we don't know.
Sure.
You know, I suspect, as I'm sure many people do, given his, you know, therapy and psychiatric background, that he probably was on some sort of psychiatric drug. You know, did he have an adverse reaction? Did they actually cause, you know, again, remember, antidepressants all carry the black box warning, the FDA's black box warning, which is the most serious warning that the FDA can put on a drug before they pull it from the market. And the antidepressants, you know, all have the warning for, you know, this may cause suicidal ideation, this may cause suicide. So, I don't know. I again, it's one of those things where certainly it's the first thing that comes to your mind when you see such a violent act.
Is a psychiatric drug. All righty, we do have to go to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back with our guest this first hour, Kelly O'Meara. Be right back. First hour is Kelly Patricia O'Meara. She is the author of Psyched Out, How Psychiatry Sells Mental Illness and Pushes Pills That Kill. And we were briefly mentioning Robin Williams, and which I think is it's a very sad thing, but you mentioned that he you know that he was on psychiatric drugs before, so chances are he was this last time when he was going for some treatment or going to rehab.
Right. Well, it certainly would appear that way, given the fact that he made light of many of the psychiatric drugs that he actually took during his life in stand-up comedy routines. You know, it's funny, you were talking about how the press really doesn't, you know, talk about the drugs, and I find it interesting. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, Deanna. There was a study that came out in September, and it made all of the major news networks. Basically, the lead was, a peek inside the brains of more than 750 children and teens reveals a key difference in brain architecture between those with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and those without. And I read this study because I was interested, again, in one of these brain scan studies. And I read it, and the thing that jumped out to me was that there was no mention within the study about whether these 750 children and teens had been on any kind of ADHD treatment, like Adderall or Ritalin.
Right.
So I wrote to the lead author of the study, and I, you know, basically said I was, you know, interested in your study, and I was wondering how many of your ADHD participants had a history of taking medication as treatment for this disorder. Interestingly enough, and I was shocked. I was truly shocked that the author wrote back to me. And this is the response. This data came from an initiative in which multiple investigators shared their data across many sites. They did report medication information, but it was messy and could not be calibrated across sites. So we are unable to say much about how medication might influence our results. Now,
what?
So this is really a fascinating response, because what they're saying is, well, you know, it just wasn't easy. It was messy. You know, we just couldn't fit those numbers in right. So we're just not even going to address how many of these kids were taking the equivalent of cocaine, you know, and how that affected...
Unbelievable!
And how that affected their brain. And what we find in these studies over and over and over again is that they never address the differences in the brain of these kids who have been diagnosed and treated with ADHD, the differences in the brain. They don't talk about the medication that these kids are on. And here we are again, the most recent brain study that was touted in the media as this, you know, wow, this new study shows the kids, you know, brains aren't connected the same as, you know, those with ADHD and those without. They're not taking into consideration that the medication that they're taking could affect what's going on in the child's brain physically.
Wow.
Okay? So, I mean, I think I just had to share that with you because I was just astounded that the author actually wrote that, put it in writing.
That is so funny.
And it's interesting because we know there have been studies that show that adults who as children were treated, you know, long term for ADHD have brain atrophy. We know that it shrinks the brain. Okay?
Indeed.
This isn't guesswork anymore. They've done many studies on this.
Right.
So why they refuse, it's almost like they purposely don't want to consider what these drugs are doing to these children's brains. And when you take that in consideration and then look at the data that shows that we have 10,000 toddlers who are on ADHD drugs, okay? 10,000, that's from the CDC.
I don't know what kind of a crazy parent would choose to allow a doctor or would accept a prescription from a doctor and just arbitrarily put their infant on a drug that it is just mind-boggling to me.
That's
stupid.
But look, not everybody is as smart as the average bear. They trust their doctors, okay?
I know.
They trust that they're giving them correct information. And what they're not doing is they're not going home and doing their own research to see what's going on. First of all, I don't know how you diagnose a toddler who can barely speak, maybe some chatter, with ADHD. I don't know how that happens. So what I do is I look at the doctors and I go, wait a minute, the doctors are the ones who ought to be held responsible here.
Sure.
Because you cannot diagnose a child who cannot speak with ADHD.
Right. Even according to the criteria and the DSM. I mean,
exactly.
They have to have a certain criteria, like being able to finish a task or some of those other stupid things that they have in that book.
Well,
and,
yeah. Often,
what,
attention,
a two-month-old is going to qualify to be on that medication? For what? For what reason? For what justification could a doctor possibly have to prescribe Adderall or Ritalin to an infant?
Well, again, the doctors may be prescribing this, saying this may stop the child from whatever, whatever they're doing, that the reason you brought them in, but certainly cannot say it's because they are suffering from ADHD, because there's no way for this doctor to make that diagnosis.
Sure.
So anyway, you know, what we always get back to, Deanna, is the diagnosis, okay? There is no brain abnormality that is ADHD or any other psychiatric diagnosis. And until people understand that first step, there is no brain abnormality. In other words, an objective, confirmable abnormality in your brain that is a psychiatric disorder. Until they understand that, they're going to continue to believe their doctors and you know, accept the treatment. And
it just makes me so mad when I hear about infants being on these drugs. I just cannot fathom.
It's extraordinary. It truly is. There are over 46,000 toddlers taking antidepressants.
Yeah.
In the U.S. That's just in the U.S. But again, you know, we look at these school shooters, and in today's world, I think the numbers that have come out from IMS Vector 1, they actually put this together, all these numbers.
Right.
And when you look at how young our children are when they are first being put on mind-altering drugs, it's not hard for me to understand by the time they get to high school what's going on.
Of course.
But that's not how it's sold. How it's sold is, you know, we need more mental health. It's not, we need to look at what drugs we're giving these kids. It's, we need more mental health, which means we need more drugs.
Sure.
So, absolutely. You know, that's one of the problems that, you know, people certainly aren't willing to look at. I mean, when you have 79 million Americans, what's that, one in four, taking at least one psychiatric drug, you know, one would think, you know, it's important. Maybe we got to look at this. These are not benign drugs. These are very serious behavior-altering drugs. I mean, that would be, let's see, 79 million, that's every man, woman, and child in Texas, California, and New York.
Wow. Amazing. All righty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
All righty. We are back. This is Deanna. Our guest this first hour is Kelly Patricia O'Meara. She is the author of Psyched Out, How Psychiatry Sells Mental Illness and Pushes Pills That Kill. And I think this is deliberate. I can't help but think otherwise because of, well, the stuff that I've read. These drug companies know exactly what they're doing, and they know that these are dangerous. The clinical trials are skewed and stacked, and they determine that that these pills are very dangerous.
Well, you know, Deanna, not only are they dangerous, if you look at the pharmaceutical companies, as you say, you've read my book, for the ADHD meds, they don't even know how they work in the brain, and they're very open about it. The pharmaceuticals tell you right on the insert that they don't know how they work in the brain. They also tell you that they don't know what is ADHD.
Right.
So, you know, they're telling you up front, and then that may be lawyerly. I'm sure they cover themselves anyway. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't know how it works in the brain, and you don't know what it is, what causes what it is you're treating, at some point, parents and adults need to start questioning: should I really take this drug? You know,
sure.
The public, unfortunately, really is the clinical trial. The clinical trials that are produced for the Food and Drug Administration are not reflective of what may happen out in society. For example, they only need to provide two clinical trials that showed that there was a statistically, you know, that it was statistically different than the placebo.
Oh, right.
And the fact of the matter is, they could do 20 clinical trials, and 18 of them didn't show any difference at all. But if they could get two out of that 20 that showed that the drug worked better than the placebo, then those are the two they're going to submit to the FDA. And that's all they need to get approval. The public then becomes the clinical trial, the real clinical trial, because that's when the masses are taking these drugs, and the adverse effects start to be reported.
Right.
So people need to understand that, too, that they basically are a clinical trial.
Right, and they really don't even know that they can report these side effects to the FDA. I mean, they could. There's several. You could go to MedWatch or any of those places, any of those agencies, and report that. But a lot of people think that the side effect is, oh, it must be my mental illness that's making me feel this way. And their family substantiates that. Say, oh, yeah, they're getting really bad. We'll have to add another drug to help them along. Oh, let's add Abilify to the Prozac or whatever. And the doctors go right along with this. And nobody reads those inserts. I don't think doctors read the inserts. I don't think patients read the inserts. And even those crazy ads on TV that are going through this list of things that might happen to you if you take this medicine, I think people are just watching the images on the television. They're not really listening to what it's saying. And it just is crazy.
This is a problem. The United States now, I think, is the last country in the world that allows pharmaceutical advertising on television. That says something. You know, I think there was a study that was done. I think 95% of people who go into their doctor's office and ask for a specific drug get it. Yes, people are watching these commercials. They're seeing, you know, at least depressed people who won't play with their dog or whatever, and then they get the drug, and now they'll play with their dog. It's sort of interesting advertising. But the fact is, doctors, you know, they have a responsibility to inform the patient of all aspects of these drugs. When you talk about, you know, giving somebody a cocktail of drugs, you know, Prozac and Abilify and an antipsychotic or maybe two antidepressants, none of those drugs have ever been tested in combination.
Exactly.
Okay, so they are giving these people a concoction of mind-altering drugs that no one anywhere, not in the FDA, not at the pharmaceutical company, nowhere does anyone have any idea how these drugs are going to interact with one another or how they're going to, affect you, the person taking the drugs. So, and we know that there are very, very serious adverse effects associated with all of these psychiatric drugs, mania, psychosis, suicidality, homicidality, aggressive behavior. The list goes on and on and on. And yet, people trust their doctors. And you're right. Instead of saying, wow, maybe this drug is causing this adverse effect, they don't say to their doctor, I don't think I need to take another drug. Maybe I need to be weaned off this one. Mm-hmm. Instead, it's, your mental illness is getting worse. And, again, we see a progression of mental illness. They start out with ADHD, then they're depressed, then they're antipsychotic. We're seeing this progression into these very, very strong mind-altering drugs from very young age on now. It's almost like cradle-to-grave, psychiatric treatment.
Exactly, and I think that is deliberate. I really do. And, of course, it's beneficial financially to the pharmaceutical industry. We're making billions of dollars. They can even afford to pay off a few of these, before they even settle in court, they can afford to pay off anybody that makes a claim against the drugs. They'll pay them before it goes to trial.
They can, but again, it's gotten worse than, I think, just the pharmaceuticals. We have an industry. You know how they go, the military-industrial complex? Well, this is
sure.
Psychiatric industrial complex. Mental illness is big business in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not getting any less. As we talked about at the beginning of the show, since Sandy Hook, 37 states have increased their spending on mental health within their states. This
that
is big
is
business.
Amazing, yeah.
And they're only in business if they can find something abnormal about you.
Sure. That's why all the screening.
All they have to do is say, you're not doing your homework, you're not concentrating. Okay, you got ADHD. Boom, we have another client for life.
Sure. Sure, so, because once you go on that drug, then you do become that's Schedule II drug, and you're just not going to go off of it like that without any repercussions. So you're going to have problems all of your life.
Well, I mean, if you look at the ADHD drugs, which is amphetamine and methamphetamine, Adderall, Ritalin, they are the closest thing we have to cocaine.
Sure.
The DEA makes it very clear. These drugs are the closest thing, and they act like cocaine when taken in the same dosage, in the same amount of time. So, you're going to put a kid who's six. Well, we're not even talking six anymore. We have 10,000 toddlers on ADHD drugs. We know
and
that those
were not those that drug. Those drugs were never approved by the FDA for children under six. Correct.
That's right. These are off-label drugs. They're off-label. They're prescribing
sure.
these drugs off-label. And again, as I said, these are when the doctors have to answer for this because they know they're not diagnosing ADHD with a toddler.
Right.
Okay. But, it's a serious, serious problem. And I think when you start kids at such young ages, you can only expect that they're going to be clients for life.
Sure.
And that's because of the drugs that are being given to them at such a young age. And it does change their brain.
Right.
We haven't even moved into the antidepressants yet. We haven't moved into the antipsychotics. But we know. The data is there. The data is very, very clear. We had 90,000 emergency room visits in the United States because of psychiatric drugs.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
And psychiatric drugs are attributed to causing 61,000 deaths in the United States every year.
Wow.
So, this is a problem. People need to be fully informed. It's like, informed consent. You need to
sure.
talk to your doctor. You need to ask, where is this abnormality? You're telling my child who was born normal now has a psychiatric abnormality? Where? Where is the
sure.
test?
Yeah.
It's really to that point where you sort of have to kind of get...
Yeah. Yeah, start asking questions, challenging these doctors. All righty, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Deanna, and our guest this first hour is Kelly Patricia O'Meara. She is the author of Psyched Out, How Psychiatry Sells Mental Illness and Pushes Pills That Kill. It is available at Amazon, and it is also available as a Kindle version, which is the one that I have. Anyway, we're talking about these drugs, and we do have a couple of comments from the chat room. Somebody said, with many drugs, the listed side effects are identical to the symptoms of the condition. And I put supposed condition. And another comment was, also, you have convinced the young person that there is something mentally defective with their brains, and that has a profound personal psychological effect. Obviously, kids are beginning to think that they can't function without a pill.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, I think that parents, sometimes it's just sort of common sense. Your child was born normal. And suddenly they get to school and they're not paying attention, they're not turning in their homework, whatever the, you know, the problems are. Suddenly it's not just, you know, okay, we need to work with the kid, or we need to, you know, do these other things. Suddenly, it's, you know, they have a mental disorder. They need to understand that it doesn't exist. There is no abnormality in their child's brain that is a psychiatric disorder. You know, any doctor who will tell them that there is, they need to say, show me the proof.
Sure.
Because it doesn't exist. It is completely subjective.
Right.
And then when you get into the treatment of that subjective diagnosis, you're starting on a lifelong path of changing the naturally occurring chemicals in the brain. What do you think will happen after years and years and years of doing that to a child's brain? I mean, these are the things that parents really need to consider before they accept any psychiatric diagnosis.
Right, and we're talking about a growing brain. We're talking about, well, for instance, the theory of a chemical imbalance. Well, how does a doctor know that there's a chemical imbalance? That you can only know that through an autopsy. There's no blood test, there's no X-ray, there's nothing to really show any kind of a defect in anybody's brain. They do show, they have shown through MRIs, that the brain tissue does shrink after being on an ADHD drug.
Well, Deanna, even if there were a test available to test people's brain chemical level, who is to say what is the right level?
Exactly.
What is the correct level?
Exactly.
We're all different. So there's a problem all around that whole theory, and I think it's been fairly well debunked in the last 5 years, that it's just nonsense. They have absolutely no proof to support that anyone is suffering from a chemical imbalance of their brain. At least nothing they can prove. And I think
True.
We just need to throw that out, you know, period.
Sure.
And I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm just so tired of hearing. I wrote about it in my book, seven years ago, and it's just as nonsense today as it was then.
And it's become part of the culture to say, oh, yeah, I've got a chemical imbalance, or I'm just whatever they think they have. And so many people are on these drugs would indicate that they actually buy into this nonsense.
Sure, sure. And once they're on the drugs, you know, they don't want to go off them because, you know, they really think the drugs are helping them. They're helping. The fact is, the pharmaceutical companies, you know, say right on the packaging, they don't know how this drug works in your brain. They don't know what causes depression. I mean, they don't know anything. But, you know, people believe, you know, that's why they say it's the placebo effect. I think it was Irving Kirsch who wrote the book about the placebo effect. He looked at all of the clinical trials of the antidepressants, and what he found was that it was the placebo effect. There really was no difference, no measurable difference between the pill and the sugar pill, the actual drug and the sugar pill, because, you know, people believed that they were in a drug study. So just the mere fact that they knew they were in a drug study, you know, they thought they might have been the one that got the pill.
Sure. And they feel hopeful. People who join these drug clinical trials feel hopeful that there's something that's going to help them feel better. And they resort to taking medications instead of using, well, like talk therapy or relying on their family or their friends or just getting out of the house, doing some exercise, something that will help them feel better, that without taking a drug that would, well, have horrible side effects.
This is true. You know, there's two issues here. Number one, we have lost the ability to be compassionate with one another, okay? I really believe that. And part of it is the pharmaceutical push. Well, we don't have to be compassionate anymore. We can just take a pill. Why do I have to listen to your problems? There's pills for that. Okay, so that's one thing. And then, you know, the second thing is that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, certainly they make billions and billions and billions of dollars on these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But they're smart enough to caveat how they write, you know, what they can, what they know about the drug, what the drug can do. And it's up to a doctor. I said, again, I have to put it back on these doctors. I think the doctors are responsible for making people aware, informed consent about the drugs that they're prescribing. This is the side effect that is possible. These side effects, these adverse events may occur. Do they tell their patients that? Do they tell their patients that they'll be basically addicted to them? That they will have enormous difficulty getting off of them? I mean, all of this information is important, and I don't believe that doctors are providing all of that information when they write these scripts.
Of course not. They give a patient to what, 5 minutes of their time, and that's it. They're not going to be telling them what's good about the prescription. And in fact, you could say that about any prescription. There's side effects and negative things about a lot of prescriptions, and the doctors never say anything about it. They expect that people will read the insert, when in fact, hardly anybody does that, including doctors. And sometimes you don't even get the insert.
Right. I'll tell you, though, what's interesting is when I wrote my book, I looked at all of the antidepressant pharmaceutical companies who made the antidepressants and went to their websites. At that time, exercise was never mentioned. Okay? If you go to one of the, you know, if you were to go to any of the antidepressant websites now for any of the pharmaceutical companies, that's usually the first thing that's mentioned is exercise. And I thought that was very interesting, and I just looked that up not too long ago. They've all changed their tune as far as, you know, well, exercise is the best thing you can do. Get out there and exercise. And it's true.
Sure.
But it's changed since when I first wrote the book.
Right. But very few things have changed from what you said in the book. That's a minor thing that they added exercise. You could read your book today, and it would be just as relevant or even more relevant than when you wrote it.
Sure. I mean, that's why I say it was sad. It's sad to me. When you write a book, you hope people will read it, and they'll understand, and, you know, things will change. Unfortunately, what we see is increased drugging, increased diagnosing, and increased harm. The number of harmful events that are being reported to the FDA are increasing every year due to psychiatric drugs.
Right.
And that is very sad to me, that in all these years, we're not getting any smarter.
Yeah, and dumber. And people who are on these drugs really lose their ability to think. I know some people who are on psychiatric drugs, and one of them is just kind of zombie-like. And I just feel so sorry for the guy. I mean, it's just really sad.
when I talk to people who are on these drugs, what I understand is they don't really feel anything. They don't feel high. They don't feel low. They don't feel anything.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of, I don't know how that is to live like that, to sort of have no feelings about anything.
Yeah. This guy just doesn't express any joy or sadness, or he's just kind of non-feeling, as you say. Well, thank you so very much for being on the program, and thank you so much for writing the book. And I hope that people will go to Amazon and purchase it. So, thank you. All righty. We are at the top of the hour. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour.